everybody, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now. It's real estate matters that matter to you. And I'm going to tell you what, we're going to interview some of the top real estate professionals in the area. We're going to talk about things like the market. We're going to talk about what's going on with sellers. We're going to talk about some things about buyers. And we're going to talk to today, we're going to talk about home inspections. So you know what? Join us right now, because I'm going to tell your friends, tell them to get on there right now. Tell them, hey, listen, Real Estate Right Now is on. And you need to be watching right now. And by the way, if you have a question while we're on the air, please, punch it in. If you're watching us on Facebook or LinkedIn or YouTube or Twitter, feel free to ask us questions. If we can answer it, we will. And if we can't answer it right away, we promise that we will get back to you. So my first guest right now is right next to me here on my right. His name is Dwayne Reese. He is a listing specialist and buyer specialist for Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. By the way, this is the Linda Kraft and Team Studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina, Research Triangle Park. Dwayne, how long? First of all, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good. Great to be here.
And how long have you been doing real estate?
I have had my real estate license, Jay, since I was 20 years old.
Okay, so 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. Yeah. So, I joke. I shave like once a week when I got my real estate license. I had no idea why anybody wanted to buy a house from me.
Oh, wow.
But I've been back in full-time since 2015, awesome. All with Linda Kraft and Team.
Awesome. All right, so, you know, this segment is the segment about what's going on in the market. So from your perspective, what are you seeing going on in the market right now?
Well, that's a great question, Jay. I came across a little meme yesterday. I love memes. You got to laugh at the world right now, right?
Right.
There's much going on in the world. So it's fun to kind of find something that'll make you laugh. And I saw this meme yesterday. It had the Grim Reaper standing outside the door of the stock market, and the stock market had been slayed. Uh-huh. And the Grim Reaper standing outside the door of the crypto market, and the crypto market had been slayed.
Right.
And the meme was all about real estate, because the Grim Reaper was standing outside the door of the real estate market.
Uh-oh.
As if he was poised to slay the real estate market. And what I would tell you, Jay, is that is not true.
Okay.
Real estate market is alive and well.
Okay.
The Grim Reaper is not standing outside the door of the real estate market.
So the meme is wrong.
The meme is wrong.
Okay. All right.
The meme is funny, but it is absolutely wrong.
Okay, so the Grim Reaper is not outside the real estate market.
Not outside.
So help us understand then, if it's not outside the real estate market, what's going on with the real estate market then?
You know, one of the biggest questions that I have had from friends and family all year long is, Dwayne, when is the real estate bubble going to pop? When is it going to pop? And my answer has been consistent all year long. We're not in a real estate bubble. The real estate bubble is not going to pop, because we're not in a real estate bubble. We have been in a classic case of supply and demand. We have had for 2 years running, and really even longer than that, we have had demand outstripping supply. I saw one stat last year that we are 5 million housing units short nationwide of what we needed to keep up with just population growth, both immigration and just family.
Say that again.
5 million housing units short nationwide.
Short.
And way too much demand, not enough supply.
Wow.
And so that is why I say the Grim Reaper is not standing outside the door. Is the market slowing down? Is it cooling off? Absolutely. But it's not anywhere near about to die.
Okay, so then let's talk about what you're experiencing. I mean, you know, what are buyers and sellers probably going to experience now in this market?
Well, what we're seeing right now is a shift. We're seeing the word I've been using for several months now is normalizing.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a normalizing of the market. It's definitely still a seller's market. We have seen a doubling in inventory really in the last 3 months. We hit a low in March, and it really stayed for several weeks, February, March, right around 1,700 homes active or coming soon.
Okay.
Right now, I checked it even before our podcast today. We are right at around 4,000 housing units in the triangle right now. If you layer in Longleaf, we're up to around 4,800 active and coming soon listings.
Okay.
If you put that in context, right before the pandemic hit, we were right around 6,000 housing. So 6,000 down to 1,700, now cruising back up. So those numbers mean this. We've got fewer buyers chasing a larger amount of inventory, because many of the buyers bought in 2020, bought in 2021. They're now out of the market because they found their home. With rising rates, rising inventory, we're seeing a normalizing in both sellers and buyers right now.
So, I've heard you use this term normalization before, and you know, it's, I guess when I think about it, I go like, okay, well, is the market ever normal in real estate? The first thing I think about, and then the second thing is, when we say normal, are we, what we're saying is that we're seeing the balance start to come back again?
We're seeing some balance come back in. Okay. I would say below about 400, 450, we're still seeing lots of multiple offers, as long as the house is priced correctly. You know, I have a showing right after this podcast. House has been on the market 22 days.
Okay.
We never saw a house on the market 22 days below 450 the first part of this year.
Right.
So that in itself is just one indicator of some of the cooling off in the market. We're definitely seeing that in the upper price points, where days on market are increasing. If you've doubled your inventory, what you've done is you've cut down on the number of buyers chasing a single property. Early in the year, January through March, we might have 20 offers on a single listing. That means 19 people lose out.
Right.
That's painful for the buyer. It's also painful for their agents.
So, I mean, like in what you do with sellers, what are you telling sellers right now as this market starts to normalize? What are you telling sellers first? And then we'll go to buyers, what you're telling them.
The key that I'm telling sellers right now is that we absolutely have to hit the price right. You know, the television show, The Price is Right. we were able to be very, very aggressive earlier in the year with our list price. Okay. So we would look at, you know, we would look not only at closed properties, but those that were actually under contract. And have a conversation with that under contract agent to say, hey, where did this thing land? We can't disclose that, you know, during the during the contract phase, but you can get some idea of kind of where the pricing is going. Right now, I am cautioning sellers to not be super aggressive on list price.
I was about to ask you
that. Super accurate on list price. I had a text message this morning from one of my seller clients. We are going active next Friday, and he was frightened a little bit by the Fed rate increase yesterday and wondering if that was going to hurt us. I absolutely said to him, no, the Fed rate increase isn't going to impact us because we're going to be one of five homes on the market that are priced below 375.
So
when you're in that seller's position, you're going to be solid.
So yeah, this is what I was going to ask you too, was, you know, the aggressiveness part of it, because, you know, when the market had, you know, just a few months ago, the market, we could price it so aggressively and people were buying homes as is. And now that switch is flipped. Now, is it flipped in price ranges or it flipped across the board?
I think it's flipped across the board, but it certainly has been, we've seen it more drastically in the higher price points. Lower price points, there's just not a lot of inventory out there.
Right.
And because of the amount of price appreciation that we've had in the last 2 years, we're talking about 21 to maybe 28% price appreciation to year over year.
Right.
So the amount of homes that are actually on the market now, less than 400, there doesn't even compare to what it was 2 years ago.
Wow.
And so you're still seeing that competitiveness in the lower price points. And when I say lower, I'm talking about anything below 400.
Okay. So, before we go to talk about buyers, I want to ask you, have you talked to other agents in other parts of the country in terms of what they're possibly experiencing?
Absolutely, because we do so much relocation business. You know, we have a lot of traffic coming to our website. I'll end up doing about 10 to 12 transactions a year that are relocation.
Okay.
And that gives me a good insight into what's going on in the market. And some of the things I'm hearing from relocation clients is they're seeing slowdowns in their market as well. So where they would have thought they could have gotten a certain price point for their home maybe 3 months ago, they're seeing their agents come in and offering lower list price recommendations. And that's going to certainly impact their buying power coming here as well.
So if you were comparing markets, because we're in the Research Triangle market here in North Carolina, and you know the Research Triangle market is a very popular market. It has been for decades.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been a real popular market. I mean, how do you handle now a buyer who's coming from maybe not as strong as a market as we have? Because, you know, I mean, there are some markets out there right now where you may not get your price that you thought you were going to have on your home, and now you're coming here, and I'm sure you deal with that from time to time. How do you handle that transition?
Well, it's always a case-by-case basis, and a lot of it depends on where they're shopping in their price range, what kind of buying power they have from a down payment and cash standpoint, where they're at from a debt-to-income ratio and their pre-approval. So each one of those situations is a case-by-case basis, and each offer is a case-by-case basis. So with every buyer, you've got to analyze not just their buying power, but also the house itself. You've got to have that conversation with the listing agent about how many offers they have in hand. And from that information and looking at comparables, you kind of come in and figure out where you've got to land on an offer price when you're representing buyers. Looking back over this year, we've seen offer prices come in anywhere from 3 to even 12% above list price. When I say the market's cooling a little bit, we're seeing less of that right now. And if a house is sat, you know, if it's sat more than 10, 12 days right now, there's no reason to go aggressive above list price. Same thing goes for due diligence as well.
Okay. So here's the thing. I know that you deal with a lot of relocation, and I will get that out and correct out of my mouth. Relocation. I guess the thing is, I would like to know your technique preparing them for what they're about to see when they come from one market into this market.
Well, that's a great observation. One of the unique parts about North Carolina and specifically our Triangle market is the due diligence aspect of our offer process. Mm-hmm. Many buyers who come here, they haven't had to deal with that. They've had to deal with just an earnest money deposit. And sometimes it really takes a lot of education on our part with those buyers coming from different parts of the country. I've heard some buyers call it hostage money. They feel like they're being held hostage, right? Because they don't get the due diligence back. And my advice and my coaching always to them is really, you got to decide how badly you want this house. And then I usually give a recommended range of both offer price and then also due diligence. And I'll give them some ranges. I'll say this would be a normal due diligence offer. This would be aggressive. This is going to be the winning due diligence offer.
Got it. Okay, so I think you had something else that you were going to chat with me about here today.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, Jay. You know, the state of the market, that was kind of really where we jumped off on this whole conversation. And to understand what's going on right now in the market, and when I say right now, I would say really the last 30 to maybe even 60 days, this cooling off of the market. We've been in this heat wave the last few days, right? Yeah. When the heat wave breaks, it doesn't mean it's going to go to freezing. It means it's going to be back to 85 or whatever. We're seeing a cooling off in the market, not a freezing of the market.
I love that.
Not a really big slowdown. If you look back over the pandemic, I joke with people all the time. I feel like I have a crystal ball on the market, and I'll look at my crystal ball and I'll try to figure out where it's going next. But every time I've shaken my crystal ball, it's like a snow globe.
Okay.
And it's a little foggy. And so if you look back over the period of the pandemic, you know, right before, and I would say not right before, I would say the 3 years before the pandemic, our housing market was like a 5K race.
Right.
It was moving at a good clip. And then when the pandemic hit, there was a lot of uncertainty, and all of a sudden the market accelerated, and it went from a 5K race to an 800 meter race, which is a much different,
way to run. Yes.
And right now, what it feels like it's doing is it's slowing back to that 5K pace.
Right.
And now we're trying to figure out where it, you know, really where it goes next.
I love that analogy. Yeah. I love that. And I know you're a runner.
So I am a runner.
So, how can people get a hold of you?
Easy. Our website, lindacraft.com, and also direct on my mobile number. That's 919-623-3731.
Do you have an email address by chance?
I do. It's Dwayne R. Everybody calls me Dwayner. It's okay. Dwayne R. at lindacraft.com.
Dwayne, you have been absolutely outstanding. Do you have anything else you'd like to finish with, or do we think we're good here?
I think we're good. Thank you for having me, Jay.
Thanks for coming on. I can't wait to talk to you again. We'll see you again. Right. Thanks for coming on, Dwayne.
Right. Thanks, Jay.
Hey, everyone. By the way, that was Dwayne Reese. That's Dwayne R. By the way, Alex Lawrence, thanks for watching. Appreciate you and all the viewers who are watching and giving us some love out there. We really appreciate you. Hey, I want to talk to you about Linda Craft and Team Realtors real quick, okay? Because Linda Craft and Team Realtors has been around for more than 35 years. And in that time of 35 years, you know that her first client still comes back to her. It is why her clients say that she is the legend of customer service. And I have to tell you something. When it comes to the legend of customer service, that's not something they take lightly. In fact, that's something that they really pride themselves on. So, you know, when you're ready to sell your home or buy your home here in the Research Triangle Park area, start with Linda Craft and Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. As we get our next guest in here, we're going to be talking with Steve Kruger. He is also a selling and listing specialist with Linda Craft and Team Realtors. And Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jay. How are you doing
today? Good. Thanks for joining us. So how long have you been doing real estate?
I have had my license now almost 16 years. Oh. I've been with Linda Craft and Team a little more than 9.
What? Really?
Yep.
Really?
It's hard to believe.
Are you coming up on your 10th anniversary? Really?
Hard to believe.
That's really hard to believe that you've been here. I feel like you just got here just like maybe a couple years ago.
Greatest 9 years of my life, Jay.
Yeah, well, it's only... Okay, so so sometimes they don't talk about personal things, but I talk about something personal. So Steve happens to also be the commissioner of the Linda Crafton team fantasy football league. And of course, he was jokingly, but I'm going to say it, he actually won last year the trophy. We have a big Super Bowl trophy that he puts his name on, and he won the Super Bowl trophy. And he wants to dig that in with everybody because we do have a lot of fun here at this. We try to have a lot of fun here at this office and good time. So, Steve, I asked you to come on and talk about sellers, and I talk about some sort of seller story. And you had a really interesting seller story. So share that with us, will you? And the guest.
Yeah. So this was right at the start of the pandemic. So April of 2020.
Okay.
And I got a phone call from someone who was calling about our fix and flip program.
Okay.
And so the fix and flip program is something where we will actually finance to update the home so that you can make the most money out of it.
Okay.
You're literally fixing and flipping your own home to make even more profit.
Got it.
And she had been under contract with one of the big iBuyers.
Okay.
There's several of them nationwide, and they pay cash offers for houses. As soon as the pandemic hit and some areas you weren't even allowed to show houses,
right,
those iBuyers pulled out a lot of contracts all over the country.
Wow.
And this lady was literally days from supposed to be closing and moving on with her life to a new home when they said, sorry, we're not buying your house. So she called me up, and she had, I think, saw online something about our fix and flip program. Mm-hmm. And so we started talking about it. And from there, I got her an estimate on fixing up her home. And from there, we got all the renovations done. She ended up selling that house for $250,000 after about a $12,000 investment. And the iBuyer had originally offered her, I want to say, like $230,000.
Wow.
So, no, $225,000. She made $10,000 to $15,000 more after it was all said and done.
Wow. So this kind of the fix and flip program, I don't think a lot of people know really about it. They don't necessarily understand it. So help the viewers and also the listeners understand what the fix and flip. You've kind of described it briefly, but give us a more detailed version of what goes on with that and how that works. Because I know that you're an integral part of that. I mean, you're kind of like the godfather of the fix and flip. It's like it has to be approved by you before it can happen.
It does require my approval. I've listed and sold a lot of houses. Only your wife has sold more
on
the listing side. So I've got a lot of experience there. What I will do, and if you think about the concept of flipping a house, right, there's a lot of television shows out there. It's a popular thing that everybody wants to be a part of. You can essentially flip a house that needs cosmetic updates. Flipping houses, the more work a house needs, the more potential value there is in it.
Right.
But buyers really are more turned on by aesthetics than things that should possibly even be more important, right? New roof has less value than new granite countertops. New granite countertops make you a profit. A new roof actually is not even as worth as much as the roof.
Isn't that it's emotional, isn't it? I mean, when it comes right down to it, even a big purchase like a home comes down to emotions, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And so that's why flipping houses work. That's why that program works. You can go in, make cosmetic changes to a house, increase its value by more than it costs to make those changes if you make the right changes. And so that's where I come in. I will recommend what changes I think will make the most return on the investment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have two different contractors that we will, I'll go to and I'll say, hey, go by the house, work me up a quote. Here's what I want you to quote for me. I'll often give them a list of more than we're going to end up doing because I have in my head sort of a budget, or maybe the seller has a budget, right? The seller may only want to spend, in Glenda's case, we spent $12,000. I've done them where we spent $50,000. I have one coming up right now for like $35,000. So I'll get that whole list. In this most recent one that was $35,000, I thought it was going to be at least $50,000 for the quote.
Right.
So we're doing my whole list where I thought we would only be doing
a part of
my list. So I will analyze all those numbers, And then I will give the seller my input on, here's your value without doing the fixes. Here's the value with doing the fixes. Mm. And typically, you can kind of double your money on that. Mm. And so in her case, you know, $12,500 investment made her an extra right around $12,500. And so in our particular fix and flip program, we will finance those updates for someone who maybe doesn't have the money to do it or just doesn't want to spend their money doing it and would rather let us finance it for them. And I will coordinate the whole project. Right. I've done it for people that don't even live in town. Right. And we'll update the house, get it sold. So.
Okay. And then of course, you get back the money from the sale of the house so that they don't have to pay the money back up front.
It all comes out of their proceeds. Mm-hmm. So we might start the process in April. House might not sell until like July, but they're not paying anything. It's just once that house sells, they reimburse us what we paid to the contractor, and they make more money in the long run. So it's a win-win for everybody. The house is going to sell faster because the better the house looks and feels, and especially if it's priced right, it's going to sell very fast. Mm-hmm. So seller gets a quick sale, they get the most money, and we got a very satisfied customer at the end of the day.
So how many of these fix and flips have you done now?
Geez, at least 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. I've got one going on right now. I can think of at least 5 that I've done. So anywhere from 5 to 10 really would be the number, I guess.
Okay, so in that 5 to 10 that you've done, what have you, is there a commonality of things that seem to get the better return on your investment that you see when you're doing it?
Yeah, so, and this is true for any house, if the person is paying for their own fixes, you start with the walls and the floors. Mm-hmm. You will improve. Now, if your house doesn't need those things, you're not going to improve the value.
Right.
But a house that can use new paint and can use better flooring is going to see a bigger return on their value by just painting first, redoing flooring second, whether that's new carpet, LVP, refinishing hardwoods. You know, a lot of these will just refinish the hardwoods.
Right.
A lot of houses these days have a very dated looking hardwood. Just because you have hardwoods, if they have that sort of blonde, honey oak kind of finish that was popular not that long ago, right? Probably around 2009. So saw a big design trend in this area around 2011, I'd say. So those floors feel dated. Now, if they don't need refinishing, I'm not necessarily suggesting it, but if they look bad anyway, right? Somebody's got a dog and floors are scuffed up.
Yeah.
Refinish them with a darker finish and replace carpet, like I said, LVP, whatever it is. Those are your two cheapest ways to improve the most value. And then from there, it's kitchen and bathroom.
Yeah, see, everybody says it's the kitchen. What is it about the kitchen that brings back so much value? Because I hear this all the time, that your kitchen is the place where you're going to get money back.
Right. I think it's a pretty simple concept when you really think about it, is other than a really special feature like a home theater, every other room in the house is just an empty box, right?
Right.
It's just you like the master bedroom because it's large.
Right.
Or maybe you think it's too large. You like it because it has a sitting room. Right. Things that we're not really going to change.
Right.
But the kitchen has cabinets, countertops, appliances, usually special lighting, all those features that are not in the other rooms other than the bathrooms. Right. The bathrooms become the secondary for the same reason. How does the shower look? Does it have, you know, polished brass door frame?
Right.
Does it have yellowish tile from the 70s?
Right.
What do the cabinets look like? What do the countertops look like? So those are the things you can change in those rooms that you don't change in other rooms.
Got it. So let's talk about the kitchen for a second, because first of all, I love the kitchen because I love to cook, and it's important to me. I mean, I want my kitchen. I want the, you know, I want what I want. Like I prefer like a gas stove or, and then my wife, you know, she's into what the countertops look like, right?
Right.
So that's what she wants, right? I'm looking at functionality, you know, do I got my right hood fan? Do I got the right gas burners? You know, does everything work? So is there one thing that works over the other? Is it, when you look at doing a kitchen, is it actually replacing the countertops is more important than the stove or?
Absolutely.
Really?
It's the same concept, right? It's all aesthetics and how it makes you feel.
Okay.
And there's only so much you can change about the functionality. I mean, you can do a complete renovation of the layout of the, you know, if you have an island and you want to change that or whatever. And you can certainly change appliances, even if it's an electric range, add in a gas line, things like that. Those typically, though, will not give you the return on investment. If you want, and think about even as much as you like the kitchen that works well for cooking,
right?
If you walked in and it had laminate countertops with a wood grained edge or Corian countertops that were green, you're immediately like, oh, this kitchen is awful,
right?
You walk in and it's granite countertops, stainless appliances, white cabinets, or you know whatever might be stylish at the moment, gray. You immediately fall in love with it, and then you're like, well, I can change out the stove.
Right.
You can change out the countertops too, but it doesn't have the same emotional response that those countertops have. If you think about it, it's all about creating an emotional response. Right. And if you walk in and that kitchen looks like today's design standards, it's going to appeal to far more people than a kitchen that looks dated but has this phenomenal, you know, wolf range and all the other things that would make for a truly great kitchen to cook in.
Well, that's okay. All right. So the last thing is the bathrooms, because I mean, to me, again, I mean, I don't think about the bathrooms as being a big deal, but evidently bathrooms are a big deal. Now, is it the half bath? Is it the master, or I'm sorry, the owner's bath? I know we can't say master bath anymore, so we have to say owner's bath. Is it all of the above? What is it with bathrooms?
It's a bit like the kitchen, right? The functionality, though, is going to work pretty much no matter what bathroom
you're in.
But the aesthetics are going to be huge. So you walk into the bathroom and it has old cultured marble countertops that have the design that looks like a scalloped seashell.
Right.
That just screams, you know, 1970 or 80, 90, whatever.
whatever year that was.
The color of the cabinets, all those things. Right. And even the shower, because now, you know, what's popular today is not what was popular only 15 years ago.
That's awesome. So how can people get a hold of you?
They can reach me. Do I give out my phone number? Is that
okay? Yeah, you can give your phone number. Well, I mean, listen, you give your phone number, your email address, how people can get a hold of me, whatever you want to do.
You can
this is your time, Steve.
You can reach me at 919-740-9795. You can also email me, steve@lindacraft.com. You can also send a special message to Steve, 3-time fantasy football champ at Linda Crafton team.
I can't believe you just did that, brother. I can't believe. I mean, you know what? You did deserve it. You had a great season. But as I already see that one of our team members here, Scott Thompson, said, "I'm coming for that trophy, Steve." So he's already writing in. By the way, thanks to everybody who's writing in and watching online. We appreciate you doing that, Steve. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I can't
you,
wait
buddy.
To have you back on the show, man.
Enjoyed it.
All right, me too. And that was Steve Kruger. You can find him at steve@lindacraft.com. Hey, speaking of which, finding a place for you to work. If you're a real estate agent here in the Research Triangle Park, you know what? We're always looking to hire great, great, great people. And perhaps you're one of those great people that are looking for a new home for you to have a real estate place. Well, Linda Craft and team would love to talk to you about your new place of work. I mean, where else could you go where you could actually have a little fun and at the same time learn about fix and flips and be trained by one of the top real estate people in the country, and that is Linda Craft. So if you're looking for a new real estate home, we'd love to talk to you here at Linda Craft and Team Realtors. You can actually go to the website and you can find a place there where you can if you're interested in finding more information about how to apply, or you can directly reach out to Linda at lindacraft.com. That's L-A-N-D-A at lindacraft.com. And speaking of my next guest, here she is, Kim Crump. She was here last week. She's back again. She's going to talk about buyers. So you're talking about buyers again this week. So what's
I am here to talk about buyers again.
Tell us, what are we going to talk about?
So today, I want to touch on the due diligence period and what due diligence actually is. There is so many misconceptions, and why is it there? Why do we even have a due diligence period?
I'm going to stop you for a second because here's something that, because we have a lot of people from other states that watch this in other countries.
Right.
And due diligence is, are you aware of, I'm not aware of how many states practice due diligence as part of their, do you have any idea?
I don't know the exact number, but I do know that there are quite a few more
states. Oh, really? So there are? Mm-hmm.
There are. Okay. There are. North Carolina was a little slow on this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought we were the first. We're not.
No. We were not. We were not the first.
We're not the first ones.
But it changed back in 2011.
Okay.
So, and not a lot of people realize that. A lot of people understand earnest money.
Right.
Because that was the old contract.
Right.
So the whole purpose behind the due diligence period came from the idea, well, if a buyer does not want to purchase a home, mm-hmm. why should they be forced to purchase a home? Mm-hmm. And there was too many disputes over the earnest money because earnest money was refundable.
Right.
But who got the earnest money? Who had the strongest case?
Right. I mean, okay. So mm-hmm. I've been doing this now since 1997, right? And
okay.
I can't remember how many times, you know, the dispute was on earnest money. Does it belong to the seller or does mm-hmm. it belong to the buyer? And mm-hmm. they were accusing, you know, you reneged on the contract. No. Mm-hmm. You didn't give me the house that I wanted.
That's right.
And so we'd go back and forth. And so much money would sit somewhere.
Clerk of the courts.
Yep. And it never got, there was like, I don't know, thousands, millions of dollars.
And it just tied up, it really tied up and wasted a lot of time.
Okay.
So back in 2011, contract changed. Commission said, you know what? Yes, we agree that the seller should have some form of recourse if a buyer walks away.
Right.
The intention behind the due diligence fee, actually, let me start from the beginning.
Okay.
Because I already jumped to the fee. Let's not jump to the due diligence fee yet. Let's talk about what it is.
Let's not go to the end of the story. Let's not do a spoiler alert.
Okay. Sorry. I have a tendency to get a little excited. Okay. So
about due diligence. That's awesome.
Okay. So, okay. Why do we have a due diligence fee? We have a due diligence fee because in our contract, there is a due diligence time frame. Okay. A due diligence time frame is a buyer's opportunity to do all of their inspections or any inspections they would like to do on the property to make sure they want to purchase it.
Okay.
Now, that comes with a cost.
Okay.
Because it's time off market. So if you go under contract on a property
right.
and the seller takes it off the market and it's contingent,
right.
then most buyers don't really want to look at homes which are already under contract.
So the
seller is saying, look, well, I would like something for taking my home off the market.
Got it.
Now, when this was first introduced, the due diligence fee, I remember my very first due diligence fee was $50. That was it.
Seriously.
That was it. Because buyers, you know, you have this massive change to a contract and buyers don't like it.
Right.
Of course. It's a non-refundable deposit. Now, if you close on the home, you get it back.
Right.
So let's say, first of all, the due diligence time frame is a negotiated time frame, usually. In a normal market, it's a negotiated time frame,
meaning,
on average about 2 to 3 weeks. You have about 2 to 3 weeks, but you can ask for more. A seller doesn't have to grant more time, but that is one of the parts of the negotiations in the contract.
Does that mean though that in that 2 to 3 period, if I'm a buyer, that I get to have my money, pull my money back out, or no?
Not the due diligence money, no.
Okay.
So you negotiate a due diligence fee based on how much time you're asking the seller to keep their home off the market.
Okay.
So the shorter the time frame, then perhaps the lower the dollar amount.
Okay.
If you want a whole month to do inspections, in some properties, if they're McMansions or really big luxury homes, you may need a pool inspection, a spa inspection. Right. There are so many more inspections that can go into those kinds of properties. Now, as this market has gone stronger and stronger and stronger, and the competition has amped up, and some agents are reporting 20 plus offers on a property, well, the seller is going to choose the least amount of risk to them, which means who is going to bring me the most amount of due diligence money? Because if they bring me $50,000 in due diligence, are they going to walk away from $50,000? That's been a very big hindrance for some buyers in this market, because that's a huge chunk of change. I mean, a lot of first-time buyers just don't have that kind of cash. Many other buyers who have sold a home are fortunate because they've taken the money from a previous sale, and then they can put it into the due diligence fee. So let's go back a little bit. You've got your due diligence time frame, okay, negotiated time frame. The due diligence fee is a negotiable fee as well, and it is non-refundable. So if you want to walk away from that house, you can walk away all day long, but you're not going to get that due diligence fee back. The difference between due diligence money and earnest money, because earnest money is still there in our contract. Earnest money is deposited with the usually the attorney's trust account. The due diligence fee goes straight to the seller. And the seller gets to deposit that money into their bank account.
Immediately.
Immediately. So we have a due diligence fee, which is deposited straight with the seller. The earnest money, if there is any earnest money, and in this market, I haven't seen that much earnest money, because if you're, if you have a buyer who's giving up $50,000 to $100,000 in a due diligence fee, then there really is no need for earnest money. So the due diligence money does not come back to you if you walk away. However, of course, if you go to closing, it will come back as your down payment, or whatever your, however you've worked that in with your lender. It could also be used for closing costs. So it really just depends on where the funds are going to be dispersed. Now, the earnest money, the reason that one is doesn't hold as much weight with a seller is because, let's say I deposit $50,000 in earnest money with my attorney, and I decide within that due diligence period that I don't want the house, well, I get that earnest money back, and the seller gets nothing. So that's why the due diligence fee is such a powerful tool. Now, it has gotten a little out of control.
Explain what you mean out of control.
A little out of control, because in a regular market, when we have a good amount of inventory, when I say a good amount of inventory, I'm saying 5 to 6 months of inventory. When we have a good market, a seller is wanting to cover the cost of their mortgage for the month and maybe some of their utilities, etc. So that's why your average due diligence in a regular market, depending on the price point, of course, and other extenuating circumstances, is usually going to cover their mortgage. So let's say between $2,500, $7,000. $7,000 was still really high for a due diligence fee. But as inventory got less and less, lower, buyers more and more, well, everybody wants the same house. Heck, I'm going to put down as much money as I possibly can if I know, you know what, I'm going to buy this house no matter what. No matter what, I'm buying this house and we're moving forward. And that's where this due diligence slowly during COVID just started creeping up,
What was the biggest one you've ever saw, due diligence?
So the biggest one that my clients wrote was, I believe, $100,000. I know.
So basically what you say, what you're saying to me is that they they put down $100,000 on a house.
They did.
And by the way, which could have, they could have lost if they didn't want the house.
If there was a major problem that really then they didn't want to move forward. So let's touch on that a little bit as well, okay?
Right.
So in North Carolina, our contract, we are caveat emptor, which means buyer beware. We have to do all the due diligence in North Carolina to make sure that they want to buy the house. Every house in North Carolina is sold as is unless the seller agrees to make a repair. And that is in the contract. So you may find something that you want repaired and it may be a pretty big item and the seller doesn't want to do it. They don't have to do it.
Okay, hold on here. So, because I mean, I know you work with buyers who come in from other states,
right?
And so, I mean, when you explain this to them,
I had to do it this morning. I had a buyer consultation this morning, and I said, just hold on to your hat because I'm gonna. I usually tell people this the very first time we meet because it really needs to sink in.
It's
a huge investment. And if you find something out during that due diligence period and it really turns your stomach and you don't want that house, well, you don't have to have it, but you're going to lose all that money.
Right.
So you really, really want to make sure while you're in that house that you're looking for the important things. It's to hire a very experienced agent who can help you go through the house.
Right.
Of course, Kim Komen is here and he will go through
inspections
and such. I'm not an inspector,
but
I've seen enough real estate to know where I really need to be looking for some of the bigger problems, which would be the crawl space. We see a lot of...
Do you get in a crawl space?
Absolutely.
So you crawl in a crawl space?
I do. Not in this dress, but... That would not be pretty.
No, that wouldn't be.
But no.
But you don't get on roofs?
No. Even most inspectors won't get on roofs, actually, because nobody wants to be held liable for any kind of damage that
I mean, you kind of have to stay in your lane here, right? Because, I mean, you're not a mechanic and not an electrician. I mean, not that you haven't done those things before, but I mean,
I have, but not very well. Anyway, keep going.
But I mean, I know, like maybe you change an outlet or something like that. But what I'm saying here, I mean,
correct.
I am not
a licensed contractor.
Right. What is the line? Where's the line drawn? You know, where you go, okay, this is my responsibility to help you, and then where I just can't.
I point things out.
Okay.
And things that you can see. See, the tougher items are what the inspectors find because I don't open a fuse box. I don't go and inspect the shingles on the roof. There are certain items that I just won't see.
Right.
And they can't, yeah. They are behind the walls and they'll come up in an inspection.
Right.
So with the main things that I really look for, because we see it so often, is a mess in the crawl space. And in the crawl space, because our surface here is clay, it doesn't breathe.
Right.
So we do see a lot of moisture in crawl spaces if they haven't been taken care of.
Right.
That's one big item I definitely look at. And the other items, we do have a residential property disclosure.
Right.
So that gives us an indication of the seller's knowledge on their home.
Right.
And if they know of any issues that they need to disclose. But the main point about your due diligence in this market today is just making sure that you know if you're going to put down that much money, hey, you have that mindset. I'm going to buy this house. I love it. I want it. I'm going to buy it.
That's awesome. That's great information. Matter of fact, we got people who are saying great interview, awesome info. They're writing to us. Thanks. Thank you, everybody, for doing that.
Thank you.
Actually, another real estate agent just said, wow, that's great info. So that's pretty cool. So how can people get a hold of you, Kim?
Kim@lindacraft.com. And I won't say what I said last week, which is the boomerang. That was last week. I couldn't come up with another Aussie joke this week. Sorry.
I still say that you can read the side of my grape nuts box to me in the morning.
Your cereal box?
My cereal box is cereal. Just read that to me in the morning. That would be fantastic.
So there is one last thing I'm going to leave you with.
All right.
And Dwayne had some great information. Steve had some great information. Touching on a new buzzword that we're starting to hear more now. So when you think about this market, think about deceleration. And Dwayne was talking about running because he's a runner. not depreciation. So we're talking about a deceleration in the market, not depreciation. They're two completely different things.
Right. Okay.
So let's think of this as we're not going to start depreciating.
Right.
We're just slowing down as far as not as many. We have more. We're starting to get more inventory. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Buzzword deceleration.
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 Got it. Awesome. Thank you, Kim, so much. And thank you. And
you're welcome.
You've done this 2 weeks in a row. We're going to give you, I think we're going to try to give you a week off next week.
Yeah, people might get tired of seeing
you. They're loving you. I'm just telling you that right now. Great. Thank you, Kim. All right. Hey, that was Kim Crump with Linda Kraft of Team Realtors. Again, her email address is kim@lindakraft.com. That's kim@lindakraft.com. I'm about ready to introduce you to our next guest. His name is Kim Komen with Komen Inspections. And Kim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me to talk about one of my favorite subjects,
home inspections. Home inspections. Okay, listen. I don't know how home inspections go in other parts of the world or the state, but...
I need these?
You don't have to have those.
Oh, okay, because I can't hear you.
Okay, wait. No, you just got to talk into that microphone right there. So if you want to take those off and put them on the table, you can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, you can do that as well. So I don't know how it works in the rest of the part of the United States. I'm assuming that home inspections are... You guys all get trained similarly.
Right. Well, here in North Carolina, you have to be licensed to be a home inspector. You just can't. When I first started, you bought a flashlight. You're a home inspector. That was dangerous. But now you have to get licensed. You have to meet certain qualifications to become a home inspector. The Home Inspection Licensure Board, they have a list of what we... I brought the website here. We have to adhere to a standards of practice, and all of our inspections do that. We can exceed those in certain areas, but we have to do those minimum. It's sort of like people don't understand the building code is a minimum building code. It's just a very minimum, and sometimes you can exceed it. In most cases, they need to exceed it.
Right.
The same with home inspectors. We exceed it quite often just for our clients because we want all to do an excellent job doing a home inspector.
Okay.
Doing a home inspection.
So this market has been kind of odd that we've been in.
And yes.
I mean, right? We've been, for the last couple of years, this market's been a little weird.
Yes.
And I know that a lot of people have maybe not, I mean, they may bring you in, but it may not matter, right? In many cases, right? Because a lot of people are like, Kim just talked about, you know, they put $100,000 in due diligence. They're buying the house regardless of what happens. They may still bring you in, but it's been weird, I would think, for a home inspector.
Oh, yeah. When this first started, when the market was really hot and you had like 15 minutes to look at a house and you could barely get a home inspection, you had to buy it anyway, I did come up with the idea of doing what they have now called a walk and talk, where I would go in, look at the most important things that I thought were in a house, crawl space. You have to look at the crawl space.
Right.
Do that. I never pursued it, but I think some people did. The Home Inspector Licensure Board had to address this, and I think now it's cooling off, but this whole market has made it crazy, and basically what we have done, we're just doing a punch list for people when they buy a house to know what they should fix. I see some cases where people are buying houses with maybe $20,000, $30,000, not often, necessary repairs, and you're paid $80,000 due diligence, you're not walking. You're buying the house.
Right.
But you can take a home inspector's list and say, well, what is most important? You know, electrical, get electrical stuff fixed. If you have crawl space problems, in the crawl space, you could have mold growing that could adversely affect indoor air quality, could cause damage to the floor structure, and so many. So you know to address that. You know what to do. If a door doesn't latch shut or maybe a sink drain stopper doesn't open and shut, you can live in a house with that.
Right.
You want to fix it sooner or later, but it's not critical, not need to be done immediately.
Okay, so I guess you know you're leading me into the question I want to ask
you,
which is, okay, let's go through some of the critical. You've already given us a couple of the critical items. So what are some of the critical things that, you know, when you go in, you go, okay, these are the must checks. What's your must checks when you go into a home?
Well, over the years, and by the way, I've been doing this probably 26 years. I thought I'd win the lottery by now, but that didn't happen.
Were you 13 when you started?
Yeah, 30. Just my IQ. But if you're buying an older house, it's odd. Electrical defects are the predominant, and I've talked to other home inspectors, that's what we find a lot of. What happens in older homes, yeah, I'm talking about 20, 30 older homes like that, you always have somebody who lived there who thinks they're an electrician. You know, maybe they had an uncle's brother's cousin who did some electrical work, and I know he can do it. So they come in and they mess things up. Fire hazards, shock hazards, is insane. And then the most important place is the crawl space. If you have major plumbing leaks or even some electrical defects you find down there, you're going to see them down in the crawl space. And now if you're built on a slab, you don't have to worry about that.
Right.
But the crawl space, yeah, you have to get in there.
So let's talk about crawl space just real quick here, because I know that Kim mentioned something, other Kim Crump, yeah, before you.
Everybody's lucky today. You had two Kims.
Yeah, two Kims, yes. Right.
Yeah, you didn't have to pay extra.
You did not have to. You were so good. So she talked about that one of the things that she says is, you know, North Carolina, we've got clay.
Exactly.
And we don't breathe very well here.
Up here, if you get water in your crawl space, it's going to stay there. I did a home inspection one time in Rocky Mount, sandy soil. It was pouring down rain. I opened up the access door at the start just to look what I was having to do. It was filled with water. And I go like, oh, man, I have to go in there. I go in no matter what almost all the time. So I said, well, I'll just get the scuba gear out and I'll go in there. We always get to crawl space last, save the best for last.
Right.
So when I got down there, it was gone. It had just soaked through the water, the sand. It doesn't stay around. Now, if you put a drop of water in a home in North Raleigh on that clay soil, it'll be there 6 years later. It goes nowhere. And now if you don't keep your foundation vents open or you have other problems, it starts to evaporate. You get high moisture. You get mold growing. The mold can provide or cause indoor air quality issues. Can start mold growing on your floor joists, floor structure. Then that's going to rot out, and it attracts termites. Nothing good about water in a crawl space. When I first got into the business, real quickly, they did not address. They said, well, water, if it gets in there, just give it a means to get out. And so you'd put a positive drain in there, maybe put a vapor retarder down. And believe me, vapor retarders have gone through evolution between cover 70%, cover 80%, cover up to 90%, but not 100%. And now it's 100%, and that's the best.
Okay.
But you want nowadays... They addressed it right. No mold, no water in the crawl space. Right. You do not want water in the crawl space. Bad.
Okay, so we got electrical. We've got the crawl space. What's the next? What's the next critical item on the list?
Plumbing. There's always structure, but structure is related to a lot of different stuff. But if you had plumbing leaks, water is going to leak onto wood, and wood rots. It'll also create mold. People talk about mold. Well, home inspectors don't do mold tests. You have to get a qualified specialist to do that. But we do look for water. If you don't have any water leaks, no moisture, you don't have mold. It needs water.
Right.
So we look for water leaks. You can see it coming down from the second floor sometimes.
Right.
Hopefully not. But if you go into crawl space, you can see water leaking down on the floor joists, and sometimes they've rotted through, sometimes they haven't. And then the water that leaks down there pulls up, and now you have water in the crawl space. So it's just a lot of problems with plumbing issues.
Go ahead. Yeah. You were going to say something you can add to that.
Well, I know what I was going to say. I was just saying this is water leaks. Now, if you have a sink that has a drain stopper that doesn't go up and down, that's not as critical, like I said before. It's a defect. You're going to put it in the report.
Right.
But when the home buyer is making decisions on what to repair, I'd probably put that toward the last, like a door that doesn't latch shut.
Okay. You did mention you kind of were in this between area between plumbing and structure. So what are you looking for when you're taking a look at structural issues?
definitely home inspectors look at all the new engineered floor structures and trusses, anything engineered. The reason for that is if you have the old wood framing, it's fairly solid. It can take some damage, and you're not going to have failure. But with engineered stuff, it's engineered. It functions well, but you can't damage it. You can't cut it out. When I first got in the business, the guy I was working with initially, we went to this one attic, and we thought, this looks weird. There are only 2x4s here. Then we realized they had taken out all the webbing in there. So he wanted to walk through it and put storage. Place could easily just cave in at any time.
Oh, my gosh.
And here's something you have to realize. Only a structural engineer or a design professional can make repairs to that, design the repairs. So you can't get Fred down the road, who's a handyman, to come in and jack it up somehow. That's major problems. As a matter of fact, I did a home inspection the other day, and they had engineered wood I-joists. And the plumber had gone in and cut the top of it out and didn't tell anybody. And that was another thing. That's why you need a pre-drywall inspection, because once the sheetrock was going up, no one would have known anything until maybe it failed under pressure and caved in. It was for a toilet, so you can end up on the second floor of the toilet, down on the first floor. Would not have been fun.
No, that would have been a ride you would not want to take, right?
Right in front of me. Oh, what movie are you guys watching?
Hey, just joined in. Just thought I'd drop in. Yeah, no. Say hi. How's that going?
You literally did drop in.
That's awesome. Okay, so structure. So we've got now electrical. We've got crawl space. We got plumbing. We got structure.
Well, there's always heating and cooling. We can talk about that.
Okay.
One thing to remember about heating and cooling is we cannot run air conditionings in the winter. So that's one thing you will always see on a home inspection is we could not operate the air conditioning system.
Right.
And I have talked to several HVAC mechanics just to verify we were reporting the right thing, and they go, well, we can turn it on and make sure the motor's working, but he said we don't get proper temperature differentials or anything that would indicate it's failed. So just understand if you're buying a house in the wintertime, we cannot check air conditioning systems.
Right.
One thing to remember about air conditioning systems, it's moving around the air that you breathe. So you want to keep your ducts clean, you want to keep your air filters clean, and in the crawl space, because it can be moldy and dusty down there, you want to make it sure sealed tightly that you're not getting any water leaks coming out. So maybe your main condensate drain pipe is clogged. Now water's backing into the system. Well, if it's inside the system, it's sitting there and it can create mold. Mold can grow better there than anywhere. It's perfect temperature. You have water and mold. So you want to keep that dry. Look at that.
Do I recall the time early in my real estate career when I first got my license, and I was going out to do home inspections, for the buyers. Do I recall there was a time when home inspectors actually did get up on the roof?
I still do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because you know, I thought it was one of those things where they, you know, just kind of binoculared it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
if you read the rules and regulations for home inspectors, the standard standards of practice, we're not required to, but this guy I hired him before the pandemic, several years before, and we got up on a roof, and I said, looked on the back side of a plumbing vent pipe, and I said, this is why you have to get up here if you can.
Right.
Now, it's up to the home inspector. If it's dangerous, we're not.
Right.
But if you can, I'm going to get up there, because on the back side, there was a big split, a big hole. And that just needed to be attended to, as you wouldn't have seen with binoculars.
Right.
So
yeah, because sometimes you can't see the flashing around.
You can't see the flashing. Yeah, you're right. And you can't see a little nail pop. No, for all of you, nail pop's probably not even that big.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I get it. You know, some of the houses that we have designed today that are so tall and they're way up there. I mean, it's
vertical slope.
I mean, I get it. So I do understand that. But I think I do remember when, you know, a lot of inspectors
early
in that, and this is the late 90s.
Oh, yeah. Some still don't. Some, you find out, are, have acrophobia, and I'm going, like, I don't know if you should get in this business or not, but you know, certain things are, you know, if you're claustrophobic, you don't want to do it because you're getting tight crawl spaces that you have to exhale to get under a floor joist sometimes. Right. And, you know, and you hoping the snake doesn't grab your leg and start swallowing you. But
this has been amazing information. You've been really a great guest here.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
Well, would you tell people how they can get a hold of you and your company name and how they can reach you? Just let them
know. Yes. Last name is Coman, C-O-M-A-N, Coman Home Inspections. And I'm having some work done on my website, so it's just a one-page website right now. But you can go to that. It has all my contact information, and wish to help you out.
Okay, so give him an email. I know you sent me an email address. Give me your email address.
inspector@comanhomeinspectionsplural.com, and inspector just what you would expect, INSPCTOR at. So
awesome.
Easy to get to. As a matter of fact, if you do a search for Coman Home Inspections, I'm the only one that shows up as Coman Home Inspections, I think, in the entire nation. So
awesome. So, and give them a phone number too, as well.
919. Oddly enough, before you say that, I used to have an office number, but I even had a. Do you remember this fax number?
Yeah, I remember fax number.
Nobody ever faxed me anything other than, you know, great deals right, like right. I get on a vacation. Right. So I got rid of that. And nobody calls me on my other number, either office number. So my mobile number is 919-418-9253. Again, 418-9253.
That's awesome. His name's Kim Coman, Coman Home Inspections. Folks, that's the show. You know what? What a great show. I can't even believe it. The hour has gone so fast by. And you know what? We're grateful for having everyone watch. Thank you so much, everyone. All over the world who watches and listens to the show. Listen, if you're listening to the show on the podcast, why not go over to iTunes and give us a positive rating? We really would appreciate it. We're going to be back next week with, you know what, 4 great guests, and we're going to learn a whole lot more about real estate. So as I say to you all over the place, you know it is. Thank you so much. Have yourself a great rest of your weekend. Great weekend. See you, everybody.
For all my dreams to come true.